your kids could get free or low-cost health coverage from Medicaid or CHIP. Even if you've applied before, they may be eligible now. Kids up to age 19 are covered for checkups, vaccines, dentist visits, hospital care, and more. And if they already have Medicaid or CHIP, remember to renew every year. Visit insurekidsnow.gov or call 877-KIDS-NOW. Paid for by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services.
Wondering if dangerous contaminants are in your home's water? Get Leaf Home Water Solutions today. We can't live without water, but we can take actions today to make it safer and healthier. Leaf Home Water Solutions is offering a free in-home water test. Just visit leafhome.com/water to schedule yours. With results from their advanced digital testing, Leaf Home Water Solutions can design a whole home system and expertly install it in as little as one day. With Leaf Home Water Solutions, you can feel confident that each drop of water from every tap and appliance is cleaner and safer for you and your family. We can't live without water, but we can take actions today to make our family's water safer with Leaf Home Water Solutions. Schedule your free home water test today at leafhome.com/water and save 15% on all home water treatment systems. That's leafhome.com/water for your free home water test and 15% off. leafhome.com/water.
Welcome to the 40K Lorecast.
Welcome to the 40K Lorecast with me, John Barsotti, and Brad Chesler.
This guy.
On today's cast, we're going to conclude our coverage of the World Eaters from just after Angron ascends to about modern 40K.
Well, wait a second, John. Did you just say we're doing a World Eaters cast today?
Well, I mean, they'll be present.
Let's qualify that.
We're doing...
I guess you're not wrong. He is part of the World Eaters. Today's going to be a Karn cast, everyone.
Yeah. You start with some Angron, but we do a lot of Karn, because Karn's more important, honestly, for most of 40K history. But
I mean, he is the chosen one.
The 40K Lorecast is a weekly show on the lore of the Warhammer 40K universe, releasing every Monday at 7 p.m. Thank you all for all your comments and your follows. We are, again, the number one Lorecast globally, and that's only because of all of you. So for those of you who are doing it, thank you. For those of you who haven't done it, please. And if you don't want to do it, fine. Also, your call. If you like the cast and want to hear more about Brad and I, you can also click on the show notes to take you to our YouTube page of the 40K Lorecast. There you're going to find old versions of the show converted over, our live Q&A sessions, and you can also find our other shows, The History of 40K and Two Old Men and Their Handler, along with some more content coming soon. In our show notes, also a link to our Patreon. Our Patreon is what's helping fund all the improvements that we're making to the show and expanding out the offerings we can produce for you guys. For those of you who want to support our cast, you also will get the show ad-free by joining our Patreon. It's only $4.99 per month, U.S., or $8.40 New Zealand for those listeners there, which unlike GW products, that's just a standard currency conversion. None of our weird calculation GW uses to sell miniatures there. For those of you who haven't seen it, look up cost of GW miniatures in New Zealand and Australia, and then be super thankful that you don't try to play the game there. Lastly, as always, our Discord, link in the show notes. Please come and join our Discord if you haven't already. It is a wonderful place to interact with Brad and myself, plus a ton of other like-minded individuals. It's on everything from literature, gaming, just general life. It's a wonderful area, and I cannot recommend it enough. Let's start off with where we left the last cast off, with Angron ascending to demonhood. Now, this is really important, because not only is Angron the first to truly fall to chaos, he's the first to actually get consumed by it. Over time, more Primarchs will do this. But yeah, remember, at this point, Horus is aligned with the Chaos Gods. I mean, Lorgar is aligned with the Chaos Gods, but none of them have been possessed by a Chaos God. Angron just was possessed and converted.
He's a new life. This is something completely different because we'll get into way later. Belakor would be the first of the demon princes, but this is a demon Primarch. It is a completely new form that's out there. And he is the most physically powerful being right now.
In the Materium. In the Materium.
Yeah. In the real space.
Exactly.
And this is huge. This is another, we ended the cast with Bobby G kind of going, yeah, I don't know what that is. I'm going to get some info and come back, because this is a completely new, powerful form. No one knows what to do with it at first. So that's why it's such a big deal.
Yeah, and let's talk about what I find funny about this is that with Angron's ascension demonhood, all is right in the world for the World Eaters. This is just an awesome moment. Yeah.
No, whoa. All should be right in the World Eaters. Well, no, but it
is. From the perspective of the World Eaters, their Primarch is now far and away the most physically powerful being in the galaxy, which is what they really care about. The Legion itself is now brimming with radiant power of Khorne, because Khorne blesses a champion. All who fight with the champion also receive his gifts. There is, though, one small problem. The Legion was supposed to be doing this super lame mission for Horus, where they go meet up with some non-demon legions on some dumb planet. This is not a metal thing to do. But Angron's in charge.
I was just going to say, Angron's in charge. Angron also has his mind back. I'm doing a huge set of air quotes for this, because he's no longer just insane, but he's now more bloodthirsty than ever, because he is now fully infused. He's more greater demon now than anything, as far as how he operates. But now he's not doing any of this shenanigans. Another reason why when you're trying to run a very tight, very scheduled plan of invasion, you don't make it with the forces of, I don't know, say chaos.
Yeah. No.
Not the forces of law. So let's talk about what he does.
Well, my favorite part is Angron is not only is he in charge, but number two is Khorne, who's in lockstep with Angron. So Angron looks around and decides that getting blood for the blood god and skulls for the skull throne takes a precedence over Horus and whatever he has planned. Khorne agrees with this. And you know who really agrees with this? Khorne. So the entirety, every single World Eater, by the way, disappear in one moment. And no one knows where they are, except they can kind of follow a trail, because there is a wake of Horus. Because when I say disappear, they didn't go into the warp. They just stopped returning Horus's calls and immediately went.
They were busy.
Yeah. And they just start going through the galaxy, ripping stuff apart. And this like trail that they create actually is in the warp.
Ripping stuff apart.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was going to say, ripping stuff enough, they are actually doing so much murder and mayhem. It's slaughter. They're doing slaughter. Slaughter and carnage, the names of the axes, but they're doing slaughter and carnage such crazy that they're actually wrecking the warp around them. So they're kind of doing what he wanted them to do, but in the wrong places, not effectively doing where Horus wanted them, even a little bit.
Yeah, and what's interesting about this is that this like trail of destruction that they're creating, I mean, they're killing every last living thing. This is a 60,000 plus strong legion that is descending on planet after planet, system after the system, killing everything on it, and then raising monuments to the blood god on them.
Well, also, let's be fair. To be fair, so first off, let's talk about things that are actually happening. Angron and Khorne got matching lockets of best friends forever, but they're also, you say they're a 60,000 plus legion. Yes, but they're the first, and we might be slightly wrong on this. I got to check on word bearers, but I think they're the first legion to actually have full demonic incursions behind it. So there's 60,000 plus world leaders plus a horde of demons every time they're going.
I would say, I think where you're going, that it's similar. It's the same, but different. The challenge is that Lorgar and his legion would summon demons in to assist them. They were at some point, it's a right around here in the Heresy. The difference is Angron and his legion are not summoning demons. They're just performing. Performing such incredible things that the demons can just manifest in reality.
Because some of the stories are great when you read them, because the world leaders are doing so much slaughter that demons, there's bloodletters, there's greater demons just appearing next to them, right behind, in their wake. They have such this force, and we'll go into some of the new stuff with Angron. They have this just powers. They do so much rage, so much slaughter that they draw these demons or like just moth to a flame. They have to appear. Like I say, it's 60,000, but it's not, because they're taking over whole worlds. And some of the time they have as many demons or more than they have.
Yeah. Marines. Yeah.
For sure.
On the flip side of this, Horus is not pleased. Horus needs the World Eaters for his final assault on Terra. I mean, yes, he's ravaged the Raven Guards, Salamanders, and Iron Hands, and he's locked the Dark Angels, Space Wolves, and Ultramarines away from Terra. Horus's Legion, though, still...
They lost half their numbers. Remember, they had to get... They purged anyone that they thought could possibly be a threat.
Exactly.
Or stay loyal.
And Horus has already had to sacrifice the Night Lords to keep some of the legions away. And there is a war of attrition happening. He is losing forces. He doesn't have the ability to gene seed up his soldiers or the time to do it that the Imperium does. And all of that being said, when he gets to Terra, he has a huge issue called Rogel Dorne. Rogel Dorne has built the fortification, and Horus knows how good those are. He also is going to have to deal with the Blood Angels, the Imperial Fists, the White Scars, the Custodes, the Sisters, also, the Imperial Army. Yeah.
Hold on. And the Emperor is still alive, not on the Golden Throne.
Right.
Here. Like, he's a pretty big deal. Like, hey, man, if all of those people weren't there, you're still like, we still have to deal with the Emperor himself.
Exactly. And so the World Eaters were a key part of his strategy, because the World Eaters are basically the best spearhead in the entirety of the Space Marine chapters. And now that they're being led by a demon Primarch, even better. Was Horus probably going to sacrifice them in a suicide attack? Yeah, he totally was. Oh, but yeah. He was still going to be very helpful. So Horus decides he needs Angron. And after a bunch of phone calls that go unanswered.
After a bunch of who number who does.
Yeah, it's just, I assume at a certain point, Angron's doing the thing where he's answering and hanging up in one mode because he's sick of the voicemails. Horus sends Pederabo to go collect Angron and bring him back. I will say, for Pederabo, this process of tracking on Angron was not very hard. It was, you basically enter the trail of destroyed planets and just follow it. So Pederabo and his legion arrive on a planet called Deluge, which, if you haven't played Wasteland 3, you should. I know it's random I'm bringing this up right now, but Wasteland 2 8, and Wasteland 3, excellent games from the original creators of Fallout. One of these days, I'll get sponsored for one of these pitches I'm doing for random old video games, but just going to do it.
Also, I do recommend this a lot, because before we went live today, I did spend about 10 minutes talking about how much I loved turn-based combat and the original Fallouts and the Wasteland games. Yeah. They're fantastic. Yeah.
Wasteland 3 is very, very funny. So is Wasteland 2. I played Wasteland 1. It was a very long time ago. I'm sure it was good, but anyway. So Deluge was an Imperial planet that has seen better days at this point, which is fair understatement, I think.
I was about to say, seen better days? Yeah, it's the paint's not any good anymore.
Yeah, no, the World Eaters descended on Deluge like they had hundreds of worlds before and decided to make it a bit more like home, if you like Khorne's Realm a lot.
So they show up, there's corpses piled miles into the sky. They have just formations. They're making basically the symbols of Khorne, but mile-high skulls to it, thrones to it. There's just desecrated bodies, but in huge scene, never before scenes. Like, word bearers will get their demons and they summon and they'll kill the cultists. The World Eaters were making, accidentally, effectively, the biggest monuments to Khorne that you could ever make. And it's pretty intimidating to come to these planets. I mean, Pederabo in the books is, what the hell is going on here? Because this is kind of he's never seen full chaos corruption, full chaos perversion of an entire planet. So he's actually taken aback, because remember, he turns, but he hasn't actually given himself at this point. Pederabo, for a long time, he's just on the side of Horus. This is the first time he's ever seen this. So he's wildly taken aback at this and is worried about what's going to happen to him and his legion.
Well, yeah, I mean, Pederabo gets there, and again, he's had no contact with Angron. He knows Angron's here, he knows the World Leaders are here. He doesn't see them. He lands on this planet, and again, these corpses are piled up, everything's all over the place. There's no one there. So what he does, he starts to build defenses around himself. not as well as Rogel Dorn would have, but he does do it. out of nowhere, the Iron Wars are attacked by World Leader Berserk. These are the guys who have the butcher's nails in their skulls. But not only that, there's also bloodletters coming in. So this is their first time seeing demons, and they're being attacked by former brothers and demons. Luckily, Petarabo did build a good enough defense, and he was able to fend them. It's what you do to melee armies, ranged combat. He used ranged combat and shot them all away.
I want to give Brad theory of the day, because I agree on this 100%. So all of this is happening. There's no record of where this is. I think that they had so much blood and slaughter that this might not be in real space anymore, at least partially. Kind of like when we had Prospero be in both the Immaterium and the Materium at the same time. I kind of think that this is what was happening.
You think that Deluge was actually partially in the warp? It's possible.
In the warp. Because they had a huge demonic incursion here. It's all bloodletters, but it's still, you just don't get them in real space.
The funny part is, as I mentioned before, that Rogel Dorn would have done it better. Yeah, Petarabo built a wall on the outside, but it didn't look up. And so Angron decides to come in from above. The skies open up, and Angron, the winged demon Primarch Angron, comes straight down. And he was in a bit of a mood. Unfortunately, we need to take a second here about how mean GW is to Angron.
Constantly. Like, he comes in. Let's set the scene. He's awesome. He's coming with full demon Primarch power, looking amazing, coming down, just decimating all of the Iron Warriors that are around him, goes after Perturabo, and he is definitely going to crush him. Unless you call him a bad name and make fun of him. What?
Every time.
Come on, man.
Every single time.
Just come on.
Petarabo. Every single time. This is what happens. So Petarabo and Angron start fighting. Petarabo has no chance here, but starts telling Angron how he was born a slave and he will now be one for all of eternity for giving himself over to chaos. And this made Angron somehow less of a fighter. And Petarabo gets the upper hand in the fight. Angron is a Primarch, so is Petarabo, but Angron is a Primarch who's also a demon prince. He's bloodletter Primarch, and he's on a world that's infused with Cornate energy. So he should be one hand backhanding Petarabo while having a conversation with someone over there about how lame Petarabo is.
Yes, he should have been using his axe and a five iron, and he should have scooped him up and launched him with a birdie putt onto the golf.
Yeah. So that being said, as they're fighting, suddenly someone else arrives. It's Gilliman and his legion, because he'd also been following the trail of destruction that Angron and his legion had left, and he was there to put a stop to it. Angron turns to Petarabo here and starts laughing, declaring that now they're both going to die, but one of them's immortal, which I thought, by the way, really good line. Petarabo, though, breaks out the old sticks and stones will break my bone, but words will absolutely devastate and offend me. Petarabo reminds Angron that he let all of his men die on Nusaria, and he's about to do it again here, because Angron's men are not immortal. Only Angron is. At which point Angron goes effectively, all right, fine. And summons this massive warp storm, almost as powerful as the one Lorgar made back on Macreg, and Angron and Petarabo just jump into it and go join Horus at Uldor.
All of the war leaders and the Iron Warriors. But it wasn't just that.
Oh, yeah. They bring everybody. So let's go into what happens next, which is Angron joins the traitors, and then Angron arrives with his full legion at Ulanor. And when he gets there, it's kind of cool. He's not the only demon Primarch, because at this point, Mortarion has been corrupted by Nurgle, and Fulgrim has been converted by Slaanesh. Fulgrim's a snake. Mortarion's.
Yeah, I was going to say, Fulgrim and Mortarion happened almost at the same time. So Angron was first on that with the ritual. And then Morty comes out of where they get stuck after he makes the excellent deal. The same thing. Stop trying to do wishes in D&D, everyone. It never works out for you. And then you've got Fulgrim, who is fully embraced by Slaanesh at this point in time.
The problem, though, is that Angron is nuts at this stage. The butcher's nails are still making him nuts. And what happens is, because he's no longer in slaughter mode, his rage and anger and impatience start really driving up, because Angron's like the bus in Speed. If he's going 55 miles an hour or faster, he's totally fine, no issues. But once he slows down, it all catches up. Luckily, Karn is also there. And Karn's about to go from a side character to a main character in about 10 minutes of this cast, guys. As we get into the Siege of Terra, this is where these two are going to flip effectively. Angron, for whatever reason, is one of the mechanics, much like the Iron Warriors, actually, that GW uses to show off someone who's not Angron. Angron's going to get in a fight with somebody, and that person's going to defeat him. And that defeat of Angron is based on how incredibly powerful Angron is. So therefore, this person's even more powerful. It annoys the ever-living hell out of me, and we're about to have to do a few of them. So, moving forward.
Which is why Angron always takes care of the ads, never the boss. Yep.
So, as we go towards Terra, Angron effectively turns into a shaking can of Diet Coke that also somehow has Mentos inside of it. This is not great. And he begins just wailing at Horus, screaming that he has to lead the spearhead. He's going to go do all this stuff. I'm going to charge the gate. And as they basically get to Terra, Horus turns to him and says, hey, no, Mortarion's going to lead it. He demanded the same thing. And unlike you, doesn't actually tell him this, but it's implied. Unlike Angron, Mortarion will actually follow a plan. So if I say, go here and do this, Mortarion and his legion will do it. Angron's legion is going to run straight at something.
Yeah, but the thing is, John, it was no big deal because Angron understood that he'd been wrong in the past and really sat and self-reflected on what Horus had to say and was ready to just deal with those plans like a very well-adjusted adult.
Yeah, Angron doesn't.
Angron
doesn't take this great. Angron basically behaves like a three-year-old well past his bedtime that also drank a 32-ounce Monster Energy drink and a bag of Skittles. He goes crazy and starts ripping apart his own ship. Not only does he start ripping apart the bridge, but he then goes for a walk basically to calm himself down. And everyone on his ship who makes eye contact with him, he kills. He's just going just through the ship, murdering anyone and everyone. And they realize he's on a collision course on his little trajectory with the reactor of the ship. And the world leaders recognize that it's quite possible Angron might just walk into the reactor of their ship and blow it up, which will blow up their ship, but also will blow up all Horus's ships. And so Angron almost ended the Horus heresy solo. So they don't know what to do. Luckily, the Night Lords have a flagship there. Obviously, Conrad is not there. And Nightfall. Nightfall has in it the impossible labyrinth that Vulcan solved.
Well, I was going to say, impossible labyrinth, which Vulcan was in for 1.8 seconds and was like, oh, the exit's right here.
And so they have to figure out a way to get Angron into this labyrinth. Karn knows exactly what to do. So Karn grabs a little teleport homer and walks up to Angron and challenges him to a fight. And this is a great Karn moment because Karn challenges Angron. It turns out is that as Karn goes to challenge Angron, we learn that Horn himself has been whispering in the ear of Angron that Karn is his champion, not Angron, pointing out all the things Karn does that are better than what Angron does. So when Karn walks up to Angron, it's perfect timing for Angron because Angron's like, great, I've been looking to beat the ever-living crap out of you in front of the Chaos God so I can be the greatest champion.
Yeah, but also Angron is still getting the, I hate how they do him sometimes. He's basically sad that he's not the true champion of Karn right now.
But he also is going to prove a point. So Karn and Angron get into a fight. All right. This is a fight where Angron should have taken one swipe and cut Karn in half. But as I said before, GW doesn't do that with Angron. Angron always has to lose. They have this protracted fight where Karn is kind of almost playing with Angron, getting him close, fighting him away, ducking his moves. And what Karn eventually does is he just starts mouthing off the whole time to get Angron angrier and angrier. And finally, Angron launches himself at Karn. And Karn ducks out of the way of one of his, like, just death blows, that, which, by the way, would have come way too fast from Dive Out of, but that's a side note, and just plants a teleport homer on him, instantly teleporting Angron to the center of the labyrinth.
Into the center of the labyrinth. Yeah. It's also, in my mind, it's another one of those where they're doing the Bugs Bunny, and there's a giant X underneath there, and he stands right underneath there. He gets hit by the safe or the anvil. Your choice.
It is possible that this labyrinth is actually somewhat in a pocket dimension, because Angron just starts ripping this thing open.
It's 1,000% in its pocket dimension. Vulcan figured it out instantaneously. Angron decided that puzzles are for bums and just started destroying it.
Yeah, they start ripping it apart. Fast forward a little bit. The invasion of Terra is ebbing and flowing. There's gains and losses for the traders. Horus and Petarabo initially tried to use like tactics and guile to basically overwhelm the palace, but not too long, and they realized that the defenses are just too strong and too perfect for such an assault. The only way they're going to get in there is brute force. And this is the first time, this might be the third time Karn dies, fourth time Karn dies, but Karn's about to die. Karn is the first of the world eaters to dive into the battle. He joins Abaddon at the Lion Gate spaceport. And here, consumed by bloodlust and butcher's nails, the loyalists have never seen anything like this. These are world eaters with pure bloodlust. They've got butcher's nails in their skull, and they just start raging through the Lion's Gate. We talked about this in probably our Black Templar cast, but it might have been our second Imperial Fist cast. Sigismund is here. And Sigismund and Karn used to be really good friends. They would fight in the pits together. They both like hand-to-hand combat. And the two of them start dueling. Sigismund, obviously, less than happy about his whole traitor invasion thing.
Which, he is a badass, because this dude is so willy, but that's a different cast. We've already talked about him. But Karn starts just going off, and Karn is so infused with the power of Korn that he is actually taking it to him pretty well. But as we have said before, when you didn't notice all the comic X's on the ground, Karn doesn't look up, apparently.
Well, it's more to the side.
Well, I mean, it is up, because Morgul Doran does jump down off the space.
That's fair. I mean, so while they're fighting, Karn doesn't really notice the 10-foot-tall, 1-ton dude in yellow power armor running towards him. And as Karn is about to deliver a killing blow of Sigismund, Morgul Doran backhands him into oblivion. That's how it's written, by the way.
He backhands him into another dimension.
I mean, this is comic book.
Actually.
Yeah. This is comic book backhand. But when he hits Karn, Karn flies off his feet into a wall, and it crushes all of his bones, and he probably, they don't say he dies, but he dies.
Yeah, well, they said, back up a little bit. They don't say he dies, except for the fact that they say Karn's bones were crushed into a jelly.
Yeah. While between the power fist backhand, which, by the way, should be a move in 40K. I feel like I should be able to have my power fist, you get two attacks, punch and backhand. punch and slap. We'll just change it over. I get punch and I get slap. I get two extra attacks on the slap. That's fair for me.
We'll be right back after a quick break.
Trying to lose weight? It's time to try Hers. At forhers.com/foryou, you can access affordable, doctor-trusted weight loss treatments tailored just for you. These include oral medication kits or compounded GLP-1 injections. Through Hers, pricing for oral medication kits start at just $69 a month for a 10-month plan when paid in full upfront. No hidden fees, no membership fees. You shouldn't have to go out of your way to feel like yourself. Hers brings expert care straight to you with 100% online access to personalized treatment plans that put your goals first. Reach your weight loss goals with help through Hers. Get started at forhers.com/foryou. For you to access affordable, doctor-trusted weight loss plans. That's forhers.com/foryou, forhers.com/foryou. Paid for by Hims and Hers Health. Weight loss by Hers is not available everywhere. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Restrictions at forhers.com. Apply.
Now, around the same time, the invasion is beginning to falter. Horus needs to up the ante, and he has to add more forces. And this is one of my favorite parts of the entire invasion of Terra. So Angron's ship that he's in the labyrinth, is in space. And they need to get Angron onto the planet, but they can't land the ship. It's too big. If you brought this ship onto the planet, it would actually crush, because these ships are so big, they're built in space. If they come onto a planet, the gravity would actually rip them apart. So they just open the airlock and dump him into space.
Angron senses the battle and just dives out.
Yeah.
And he's like, this should be fine. They describe it as a fiery meteor crashing to the planet, from which Angron, he basically hits the ground, explosion because of the whole meteor coming from space, and instantaneously starts going on a murder spree immediately with everything around
it. Going straight towards the walls. Now, the thing Angron didn't know, that Horus did know, was that the Emperor's psychic barrier was still up. And so as Angron is rushing towards the wall, killing every single member of the Loyalists who are available, he bounces off the wall. And
well, yeah. Let's talk about what's happening up there. Sanguinius is standing up there, which, if you're talking about people Angron doesn't like, would be high on the top of his list.
Yeah.
And he bounces off because of the barrier, because Angron effectively is a demon, so he can't cross this psychic barrier. It's locking out demons, and Sanguinius is standing on the top of the walls talking an insane amount of smack talk to Angron. Yeah.
Like his father smelled of elderberries, his mother
farting in his general direction.
Was a hamster, and then starts throwing livestock down at him. I mean, it's not really what happened, but it would have been better that way.
Close enough.
Angron gets even angrier and decides to turn and just go to the Eternity Wall spaceport and go do his own thing there, which is my next favorite part of the Angron saga. Angron turns his attention to the Eternity Wall spaceport.
And he just comes crazy out. Now, they weren't ready for Karn's amount of fury. Angron turns the Spinal Tap up to 11 and just starts devastating the spaceport. I mean, just wrecking it. This also was, to be fair, this was actually wrecking the plan of the defenders, because Angron took out the defenders of the spaceport wildly faster than he was supposed to, because they're just not ready for a juiced up demon Primarch losing his mind after just being talked crap to.
Yeah, the problem is that Angron's not a very good pay attention guy. And so while he's doing this, he's just slaughtering everyone at the spaceport, he doesn't notice that the orbital guns are moving. And as he turns over one of the orbital guns meant to shoot down ships that are actually in space, he takes that to the face point blank.
But here's the thing. I wish they would do an animation of this, because an orbital gun got pointed down, which in itself is hilarious. Yeah. And he just didn't notice that a 50 meter long gun was directly pointed at his head and turns around with the yikes, the little flag, and gets blasted in the face.
He then reforms almost instantly, though, very, very, very angry. And I do want to pause here for a second. So Angron took an orbital gun to the face, but he couldn't beat Petarabo in a hand-to-hand combat. That just feels...
We're not going there. It, every time Angron fights a named, main named character, it
does it well.
Whatever. It bothers
me. Now, Angron's presence in the Siege of Terra is about to come to a close. In fact, not only is his presence in the Siege of Terra going to come to close, his presence in the game, in the lore of the game, is going to come to close for almost 10,000 years after this moment. The Siege of Terra is commencing. The fury and the force with which the traitors are fighting starts breaking down the Emperor's force field. And as a result, the front lines have to shift backwards to the palace itself. Sensing the weakening Emperor's aura, Angron and the world leaders launch themselves forward again. Unknown to Angron, he was actually being driven not to the Emperor, but to Sanguinius. Horus was doing this because Horus knew he had to get Sanguinius out of action. And after Cabanda failed to do it, he's kind of running out of people. So he sends...
I was going to say, Cabanda did exactly the opposite. Because if you recall in our cast before, he took Cabanda and broke his back in front of the forces of the Imperium to rally them. So it did not have the effect he was hoping
for. Angron, of course, runs straight into Sanguinius, and the two of them have an epic duel. It's a long book, guys. I'm not going to cover the whole duel, but it comes to a conclusion when Angron runs Sanguinius through with his black blade, which is an awesome blade, by the way. It's super cool in the lore. It gains permanent strength for each duel that it wins. So it defeated Sanguinius. So he still has it. It's kind of a cool sword.
tank.
So Sanguinius decides, nah, I ain't going out like that. And while impaled in the sword, he grabs Angron's head, reaches in and gets a hold of the butcher's nails, which, as we've said, they run a little bit outside of the skull too. If you look at the Angron model, you can see them. They're actually on there. And he just pulls them out of his skull.
Which is amazing because he pulls them out because they're part of his, they're part of him. They're physically part of him because now they're charged with warp and energy. They're him. Oh, yeah. What happens because he rips out the nails, John?
Angron's head explodes. He gets banished to the warp. And here he appears briefly 7,000 years later, but doesn't really appear again for almost 10,000 years. As soon as he goes, the world eaters go into a rage, which is actually not
just lose their mind.
But it's funny. The rage they go into is very similar to the one that the blood angels go into when Sanguinius dies, where they just start killing 100%. Anything nearby them. Blood has to be spilled.
Right. Well, it's else. Remember, it's we talked about this. They go into a rage of killing everything around them, friend or foe, period. Blood for the blood god, period.
And what happens is around the same time, while this is occurring on a different part of the invasion, Karn has been resurrected by Khorne again. And Karn is leading his own battle group in the charge up into the inner palace. And as always and forevermore, Karn is at the forefront of this assault. Karn never leads from the back. He is always the first one into combat and he'll be the last one out of combat. While he's fighting, he sees a very familiar shape appear in front of him, and it's Sigismund. Sigismund has come out again to fight Karn. This seems really cool, more from the if you understand the backstory of it all. Sigismund and Karn were both born on Terra. They are both some of the first recruits into their legions, and now here they are standing on their home planet, fighting to the death, to determine whether the planet is going to basically continue to exist. Because, by the way, if Horus wins this, they just destroy Terra. I don't think he's going to sit on the throne. Sigismund, though.
Give Sigismund a little credit on this. Sigismund's very tough. This is an amazing battle setup. Sigismund might be one of the top 10 trash talkers of not caring, giving any Fs about what is happening. Like, hey, I'm hopelessly overmatched. Good to hear.
Oh, yeah. Sigismund and Karn are fighting. Karn is infused in the powers of chaos. Karn is the champion of Khorne. And you know who doesn't give two Fs about that? Sigismund. Sigismund decides to beat the pants out of Karn and kill him.
While giving...
While lipping the whole time.
Hold on. You have to give him credit for this because it's not like he wins. He gives him a lecture. Yeah. About why he's disappointed. I'm not even mad. I'm just disappointed.
So now
he just gives him a talking to.
And Karn now dies for the second time in like an hour and a half. Now, what happens next is the rest of the heresy, obviously. The emperor teleports to the vengeful spirit. They fight. Horus is killed. And the forces of chaos have to retreat. Before they leave, the World Eaters go and grab Karn's body. And the reason they do this is because he is their greatest champion. As we talked about with Angron back on New Ceres, Angron was furious that his fellow warriors had been left to decay in the sun. A true warrior deserves burial rites. So the World Eaters, despite the fact they've lost the battle, still want to honor Karn. And so they collect his body to go bury it wherever they're going.
But they don't need to bury it, my friend, because luckily for the World Eaters, they had the magic man, which is the warp, but Karn's only mostly dead. Yes. So they go back. Everybody's fleeing back to the Eye of Terra. And Karn was dead, but he wasn't all the way dead. So they kind of reach the threshold of the Immaterium. And Karn pops back up. He was just, he pops back up going, hey, guys, I was just kind of hurt. I know it looks like my body is destroyed. There's no way I could come back from this. But, it was merely a flesh wound. I'm going to walk this off.
We've discussed in pieces what happened when the Traitor Legions entered the Eye of Terror. So the Eye of Terror, first and foremost, is not in the warp. The Eye of Terror, it's in between the two. It's demons can manifest there, but a being from the Materium can also be there. A being from the Materium that enters the warp actually gets ripped apart, with the exception of like Drago and a few others. So the Eye of Terror is this weird little space where it is both in Materium and not in the Materium. As the Legions of Chaos, or actually, yeah, now they are the Legions of Chaos, enter into the Eye of Terror, they have to start establishing a place to call home. The Thousand Sons already had it because Prospero got shifted to the warp, but everyone else has to go kind of conquer something. And the World Eaters are, much like everybody else, decide on this one planet that looks awesome called Skellathorax. Oof, I was about to call it Skrillex. It's definitely not Skrillex. music that, by the way, definitely would kill Brad. I feel like dubstep and migraines don't go well together.
What are you talking about? That's exactly what I put on. Yeah,
that's why you always have migraines, is because Brad wakes up every day to Skrillex.
Just dubstep constantly.
The only issue is that this planet, Skellathorax, is not only of interest to the World Eaters, it's also of interest to the Emperor's children. And that's because this was used to be an elder world.
Well, we'll pause on that. Remember, most of these worlds in the Eye of Terra were Eldar worlds, because this is the previous center of the Eldar civilization.
Yeah, that's a fair point. The problem is that Slaanesh wants it, and Karn and Khorne don't care what you want. They have their own wants. So Karn and his World Eaters descend on the planet, and they get in this massive war with the Emperor's children to control it. As they're fighting, and this is something that comes up with Eldar worlds a lot that are inside the warp, the Eldar world itself begins to sense all the chaos and decides to just, we're not having that. And the world itself tries to defeat chaos. Not again, this isn't like Eldar forces appearing. The world does it. The entire planet starts to have its temperature drop massively. Not like a Canadian winter cold.
Hold on, man. You made it sound like they turned down the thermostat. Hey, guys, we turned the air down a little. No, this place starts to get breaking steel cold.
Yeah. It's so cold that chaos-fueled space marines couldn't withstand it. So both forces retreat and from the battle to go back to seek shelter in their war camps. Karn doesn't agree with this method. And this is one of the most important parts of the history of Karn. Karn decides he is not going to be denied his slaughter, because what happened, people are like, well, the weather will break. And Karn's like, I don't care. I'm killing now. And he's watching his legion go back. And what's he do with cowards? The same thing you do with witches. You burn them.
Burn them.
And so his chain axe in one hand, which we'll cover more on that in a second, and his flamer in the other, Karn starts to burn down all of the shelters of the World Eaters.
I love this, because anybody that won't come to fight, because people start hunkering down in bunkers, and Karn just opens a hatch and goes, well, eat flame, coward. And he does this for an entire night, which who knows what time is. Again, in the warp, it's different. You have no idea. But in the course of one night, he fractures the Legion.
Yeah. What I don't like about this writing is that it supposedly sets off a chain reaction and causes the entire planet to burn with fire, which just doesn't make sense. So I'm just going to go with he burnt this little region, but whatever. But as everything burns, Karn enters more of a blood rage, because World Eaters are coming out to fight him now. And he begins just slaughtering everything. And that's because, as far as Karn's concerned, skulls are skulls, blood is blood. So during this slaughter, anything that attacks him or anything that even moves, he attacks. Where it becomes really important, the great kind of the connection point from early Karn to this moment of Karn, is that he gets attacked by three unseen assailants. Two of them don't matter. He kills two of them. The third one...
two red shirts named Guy, but the third guy is Gruner, which is his mentor back on Terra, who showed him the ways of being a World Eater Marine in the first place, when he first joined the 12th Legion. And Gruner starts yelling at Karn, telling him, what does he call him? You're betraying everything that he had taught. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, there's a reason that he's now called Karn the Betrayer. Yeah. So,
and he was asking him, in the pursuit of what? And to which Karn turns him and answers, the contest. 1,000 skulls is a pathetic toll. Karn has already counted over 1,000,000 skulls. He has won the contest, and he's not done. Karn was going to continue collecting skulls and proving himself to be the greatest warrior of all time. And then he adds Gruner's skull to his collection of skulls. This is why Karn is called Karn the Betrayer. It's because he betrayed his own legion. He betrayed his own oaths. He betrayed everything in the pursuit of selfish gain.
And the thing is that he not only is betrays, but again, he shatters the Legion. They splintered it into war bands. Angron's nowhere to be seen. Karn clearly does not care about leading anymore. He just wants to personally kill as much as he can. Blood for the blood god, skulls for the skull throne. So the world leaders splinter into war bands.
Yeah, and there's a key piece of this. The world leaders splinter into war bands, but these are war bands that still are aligned with Khorne and are powered by Khorne. You have to be careful how you read these things, because what he talks about is, oh, they splintered into a fractured legion. Yeah, but they actually become a menace within the Eye of Terror because, and this is just, I think it's hilarious. Yeah. So these world leader war bands become a huge menace within the Eye of Terror because they don't really care about anything but killing. So they're attacking a random place to kill as many people as possible. They don't want to have any interest in holding it, and they just leave afterwards, which makes actually defending against them, but more importantly, countering against them almost impossible. And over time, they turn into this weird legion where a world leader warband might be a dozen, it might be 100, maybe 1,000, but they're just completely fractured. They don't even talk to each other and they're all over the place. And as each warband, because they're just striving to get as much favor from Khorne as they possibly can, couple key people, namely Abaddon, come to a realization that, hey, these warbands actually can be a pretty big asset for me.
And this is how I entered the lore of this, because this is how they're explained in 40K in, well, third edition especially. Mm-hmm. They really start pushing the fact that the warbands are used by all of the other legions. So world leaders can be their own thing, but they were really pushed originally as these warbands that especially Abaddon would pick up and use every time he needed them to be a shock troop all the time. So you had these bands of Khorne berserkers being pushed into wherever the fighting was the heaviest.
Yeah. And this is, to Brad's point, that style permeated the 40K tabletop until, I don't know, when did the world leaders get a codex?
Until 8th. Was it 8th or 9th edition?
Was it? No, 9th. They didn't have one in 8th edition. Ninth edition.
So yeah. And it was either end of 8th or beginning 9th.
I mean, people would run world leader armies, but it is. That's the world leaders were meant to be a fractured force until very recently. Right. Now.
Exactly. There wasn't a world leader's army. You were chaos and you ran a warband inside your chaos of Khorne because that's just how they were.
Now. We're pretty far into the cast. Let's have some fun now. Khorne. So as all these warbands are doing their thing, so is Khorne. Amongst the forces of chaos, there are a few iconic phrases that permeate every edition. Death to the false emperor, let the galaxy burn. But my favorite, I think Mojo's favorite, is kill, maim, burn. Kill, maim, burn. That's Khorne. And he is a man of his word.
Yes, he is. It is disappointing that Khorne, however, has his trusty chain axe that he's always had, but his model has his plasma pistol. I always wish he kept the flamer that he originally broke everything with.
Yeah, but to be fair, historically, the plasma pistol's more of what he uses.
Yeah, he's always had that, but it's just like when you think of him breaking it. Now, his axe is Gorchild, and it's not his original axe, but...
Gorchild's got a cool history. So Gorchild actually was Angron's axe, but while he was fighting the Ultramarines, it broke. And Angron has this weird thing where he says once a weapon is broken, it means that the weapon is cursed. He believes not only should you not repair a weapon, but you also should never inherit a weapon.
I love this, though, because he says that Khorne gets his axe, not as a respect to his Primarch, but he wants to one-up him. Yeah, you couldn't use this effectively. I'm going to collect so many skulls with your weapon.
Yeah. And actually, you know, let's take a little break on Khorne. I want to talk about Khorne's war gear. Because one of my favorite things about Khorne is an iconic character. It's been an important part of the game for...
Since the beginning.
Yeah, ever. And so as a result, GW's really dialed in on who Khorne is and what he wears. So Gorchild is his most famous element because it's his axe, but there's actually better ones that he has. First off, he's got this weird power armor, which is kind of meh, because it's just power armor with like Khorne and Eightfold Path written on it, but it's decorated. And there's two pieces about it that I want to talk about with the decoration. The first off is it's missing the left pauldron. And there's no reason given to why he doesn't have it, but I do have a theory as someone who builds and paints models. When something has a pauldron and an arm is either up in the air or off to the side, the seating of that pauldron on the body is a massive pain in my ass. Astronomic. So I think someone at GW was doing the modeling for Khorne and just got angry trying to get to have him in a really good position and showing off all the muscles and still get a pauldron over it, and then just took the pauldron off and went, yeah, it's supposed to look like that.
Yeah, threw it in the garbage and went, yeah, I meant to do this.
I might be wrong on that, but I don't want to be. I think it's a better thing. The other part, though, of Khorne's armor that's more important from a lore standpoint is he has a bunch of skulls hanging on it. And these are not random skulls. They also get replaced. These are skulls of the people he has killed that he enjoyed killing the most. His old mementos. Most. Yeah. These are his mementos of triumph that are hanging off of his body. Another key piece of Khorne's armor is, remember, Khorne doesn't really care much for psychers. Khorne's armor, or Khorne himself, we don't really know which one it is, actually has so much Khorne flowing through him that he functions almost like a blank. A very, very powerful one. So much so that force weapons, the weapons used by the Grey Knights, cease functioning when they get close to Khorne. So a Grey Knight actually probably couldn't kill Khorne because his sword wouldn't work.
Yeah, because his armor works effectively like what's called a Collar of Khorne, which is a psychic negation item.
I really do wish, by the way, this was on the tabletop. I think it'd be funny if, like...
It used to be.
Well, it used to be. Not the way I would make it so Grey Knights, like, wound him on a six. That's what I would...
Yeah, that's true.
What it should be. Yeah. That's what it should be. A Grey Knight, like, if you're using a psychic weapon, but you should wound on a six into Khorne.
Yeah, because remember, like, these Collars of Khorne items used to block psychic powers or anything that was force-related on a two.
Yeah. That's always been my thing when I look at some of the rules around Khorne. I'm like, they could lean into this a little bit more. But the best part of all of Khorne's outfit is the helmet itself. So during the Horus Heresy, when Horus realized that Khorne's a lot more reliable than Angron, but Khorne's also a psychopath, he gave him a gift.
Yeah. I love about this because Horus basically goes, what's the best way to focus him up? And I think his original idea was he just ties a stick with a carrot on a string in front of him. And he goes, well, I can use that idea by giving him a kill counter display.
Khorne has inside of his skull, as soon as he begins an action, it's a digital readout that keeps track of everyone he kills. And it resets, obviously, when he stops killing. And I love this because I've always thought of Khorne as a mix between Wolverine, Beatrix Kiddo, and Duke Nukem. That's just how I've always envisioned him. And so this counter just starts going while Khorne's screaming, burn, maim, kill, and just doing all of those things, by the way. On the record of this, Khorne has so many kills. Khorne himself has a separate pile next to his throne of all the skulls Khorne has donated to Khorne. And Khorne is also aware of this. Yeah.
It is, by the way, it's not a small
pile. It is not. Yeah, it's not a minimal pile. It's a good sized pile. Khorne's a big fan of Khorne. And for those of you who don't have to do this like Brad and I do, constantly having to say Khorne or Khorne is not easy. Oh. There's going to be a lot of edits in this cast of me having to flip those two back around. Let's go back to the Split Legion. So the World Leaders are a Split Legion all over the place. Khorne does have a collection of the Legion himself. He's got a bunch of just berserkers, the guys with all the butcher's nails in them, the whirlwinds of death. Them, with Khorne always at the forefront, are just moving around the galaxy. And what's funny about this is whereas Abaddon would use members of the World Leaders, these World Leader warbands, to fight with him, Khorne's a little bit trickier in that one. There are new...
Well, there's numerous times when Khorne, mid-battle, decides who he's fighting for. He decides they're cowards.
Yeah.
Especially if you don't engage in melee, You know who doesn't really like to hang out with him anymore? People like the Iron Warriors that want to shoot from a distance, because Karn will turn on
him. Oh,
if he thinks that you are not in entering the battle and be one with
Karn. And we're going to get to something, a key piece in that in a second here with Karn. But yes, exactly. Legions would go and try and enlist Karn to help them out. The problem is a lot of these legions assumed Karn was an idiot. And so they would be, hey, go do this slaughter over there while we hang back here. And suddenly Karn would either stop the slaughter, more likely though, he would finish the slaughter and then turn on them before they were ready for and slaughter both. Because again, skulls for the Skull Throne, I don't care where they come from. The only person who's been able to successfully work with Karn is Abaddon. Too. And Abaddon's used him in numerous Black Crusades. And this is because Abaddon knows the secret to controlling Karn, which is do not try to control Karn. Let Karn be Karn and build your battle plan around Karn being Karn. And Abaddon even has a great quote. Now, I forget which book this is from, but it's about how he's been able to utilize Karn. He says, only a fool takes Karn for a mindless brute or rabid dog. Under the blood-soaked helm lurks an intelligence and cunning that makes him the masterful killer. Trust me when I say there is a dark purpose in his madness. This is because Abaddon realizes, and it makes sense, Karn couldn't kill this many people. He couldn't be this successful if he also wasn't kind of a little bit of a military genius in his own very messed up right. And so, because Karn is a perpetual, but only so long as Karn wants him to be a perpetual.
He has to be his favorite. He has to be his chosen on that.
And some of the fun examples of Karn being Karn come from Abaddon. It's the Seventh Black Crusade. In the Seventh Black Crusade, Abaddon wanted to weaken the Blood Angels by corrupting their gene seed. And so his goal was to kind of increase the prevalence of the Black Rage and the Red Thirst within them. But we'll cover that another time. What I want to cover here is Karn doing Karn stuff. On set of this assault, Karn and his berserkers lead an attack on a Blood Angel cruiser. The best way to deal with this, Karn decides, is to crash his ship into the Blood Angel ship. At which point, there's an airlock. And Karn decides, nah, there's not, and cuts a hole in the airlock. After cutting a hole in the airlock, though, the ship kind of collapses behind him due to the depressurization. And it's Karn standing inside of a Blood Angel ship by himself, looking up at a few dozen Blood Angels Terminators.
I was just going to say, it's not just Blood Angels. Yeah. It's Blood Angels Terminators, which are the best of the best in the best armor. Yeah. However, that little counter on his display from his helmet goes on, and Karn just decides to definitely, again, tap his heels three times and his boots are mighty ass kicking, and goes just banana pants.
Yeah. By the time the berserkers who were stuck behind him had carved their way into the ship, which is a few minutes, by the way, Karn's already killed a dozen Blood Angel Terminators hand to hand. Inside of a ship. Karn and his crew then go on and slaughter every single Blood Angel, deckhand, astropath, whatever it is in the ship. And they only leave. And Karn, of course, is the last one to leave after they were sure there was nothing left to kill.
Which is so crazy. Because remember, these ships are so big. Yeah. There's tens of thousands of people in this ship.
There's hundreds of Blood Angels in this. And he killed all of them. I mean, it wasn't him and four dudes, but it wasn't like he was there with 10,000 soldiers. Yeah.
But he's also killing every single deckhand from midship levels, which are basically cities into themselves. Yeah. So he's just murdering. Oh, man.
Karn and his team go back into the warp after this and continue doing raids into real space, also inside the Eye of Terror and other Chaos Legions. But in the 13th Black Crusade, he comes back. And this is because, by the way, in the 13th Black Crusade, everyone comes back. Abaddon brought the house.
Who did he bring? Everybody. Yeah.
I love this one, though. So Karn is unleashed on Cadia at this point, and he and his berserkers start tearing through Cadia. They kill Space Marines, Guardsmen, Skitars. Sorry, I said they kill. My mistake. Karn kills.
Karn
Space
kills.
Marines, Guardsmen, Scutari, leads you to Cybernetica. And then at one point, Karn finds himself face to face with a Titan and decides, I got this, and takes out a Titan. But his greatest achievement is actually at the end of the 13th Black Crusade, because Karn, as Cadia is falling, senses a foe among the Imperial forces that he has to go deal with.
Suck it, Saint Celestine. Yes. They go toe to toe and Karn pummels her. When I say pummels her, he knocks the sword out of her hands, doesn't just chop her head off. Before he does it, sorry, he does actually chop her head off. Before he does this, he rips her wings off her back, talks a mad amount of crap about it, and then cuts her head off.
She does resurrect. But,
which she always does.
Now, we skipped from the 7th Black Crusade, the 13th Black Crusade. We skipped over a lot of stuff. And namely, the return of Angron and the unification of the Legion, sort of. That's because in the future, we're going to do a cast on Armageddon. I like the cast that we did in the War of the Beast. So we're going to do a cast on the First War of Armageddon, which does happen before the 13th Black Crusade. Just timeline-wise, it's easier for us to do it that way. But for now, I want to kind of get us up to about modern 40K. So at M41, before the fall of Cadia, Angron returns. With his return, the world leaders went from a splintered faction to a unified one. But in the final battle of Armageddon, Angron was bashed the warp again. But the world leaders would continue to unify and unify and unify. After the fall of Cadia and the opening of the Great Rift, Angron all of a sudden goes from a forgotten Primarch to one of the most present Chaos Primarchs. This is more in the lore standpoint. Wait, I'd say, like,
let's talk about this because it's a big deal. It's my first big deal of the cast, you know, because Angron used to be banished for up to millennia.
Oh, yeah.
Now he comes back. He would disappear for 8 days. 8 days, months, or years, but it's always something at eight, or it could be 8 minutes if you're talking about the attack on the Coral Engine. And every time he appears, his Legion comes around him, and he comes back over and over in an unkillable rage machine. The more he kills, the faster he would come back. And he would also bring, he could actually focus himself as a foci, a gate for chaos
deeds. Yeah, and this is a big change in the lore, because the world leaders have moved in the lore from kind of a boogeyman of the past and more of a side character in some things to actually being a leading threat. So the Arcs of Omen, Era Indominus, these are all actions of the world leaders specifically. Whereas, again, before it would be Abaddon's doing something or someone's doing something and there would be a world leader warband with them. No. Angron is now leading his world leaders. For what purpose? No one really knows. It's still Angron. He's still losing fights constantly. But they are actually a key part of the lore now, which is why we want to do this cast on them. We're not sure if they're trying to conquer the galaxy or just spill more blood. Who's manipulating them? Because
who's to say?
Because Angron's always being manipulated. So someone's manipulating this for some reason. It's probably Abaddon, but we will find out in the coming years. With that, I think that should be enough coverage of the world leaders. And we'll get more for those world leader fans. There's more stuff we're going to do, but it's going to be more based around individual actions they were key into, namely First War of Armageddon and that like. Next week is our 100th episode, which I should have planned for, but I didn't. So we're just going to do another regular episode, but we're going to do one on the Dread Pirate Roberts of 40K, Cypher.
Cypher!
We promised you all we would cover him in depth, and that was a year and a half ago. So I'm getting around to it now.
he's one of the coolest characters, though. He's changed so much, or has he? He's enigmatic.
Cypher's a plot device. It's called what Cypher really is. Cypher's a plot device. Yeah. That's the only way to explain him. And a good one.
Let's talk about it. He's done a lot of stuff. He's been places that no one else has. So it'll be a fun cast, I think.
Exactly.
I think it'll be a very fun cast. I'm excited.
Yeah, next week we're going to dive in more into Cypher and Dark Angels, and then from there we'll kind of continue on. Until then, this has been John Barsotti and Brad Chester. See you next week.
Hey, football fans, Drew Brees here. Kroger Play and Owner's Box have teamed up for the next generation of daily fantasy sports. First-time players can get $25 in free entries, plus 250 fuel points. And you can score all season long with 2x the fuel points for every dollar spent to use at Kroger Fuel Centers. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Void where prohibited. Eligibility restrictions apply. 18 plus in most eligible states, but age varies by jurisdiction. Offer is valid between 8/6/25 and 1/5/26. Terms apply. See full terms and conditions at ownersbox.com/footballfuelpointstc.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Wondering if dangerous contaminants are in your home's water? Get Leaf Home Water Solutions today. We can't live without water, but we can take actions today to make it safer and healthier. Leaf Home Water Solutions is offering a free in-home water test. Just visit leafhome.com/water to schedule yours. With results from their advanced digital testing, Leaf Home Water Solutions can design a whole home system and expertly install it in as little as one day. With Leaf Home Water Solutions, you can feel confident that each drop of water from every tap and appliance is cleaner and safer for you and your family. We can't live without water, but we can take actions today to make our family's water safer with Leaf Home Water Solutions. Schedule your free home water test today at leafhome.com/water and save 15% on all home water treatment systems. That's leafhome.com/water for your free home water test and 15% off. LeafHome.com/water.